This is CliffCentral.com.
Well, hello, hello, hello. Of course, you know when you are hearing those lovely Tibetan singing bowls that you are listening to Beyond Ears and Eyes here on Cliff Central. I'm Liesl Tom. With me in studio, our controller, Palesa Mabuye. And unfortunately, Shemaine is not able to join us today. Shemaine, when you listen to this, I miss you. She's at a workshop and she couldn't get out of it, and we're definitely going to miss her input. Now, also with me in studio is a lady who calls herself a soul whisperer. Vanessa Awaken, welcome, and tell me, what is a soul whisperer?
Hi there. Hi, Lisa.
Was I a bit quick on you then?
You were. You took me a bit by surprise. A soul whisperer is, I do so much, and I think there's nothing on the market, if you like, that describes exactly what I do. Mm. So I listen to what people aren't telling me. I listen to their souls. I listen to the words in between the words. Mm. And I give it back to people, and I allow them to then understand their lives more, better, more fully.
Are you, in other words, psychic?
Yes, I probably am psychic. But it's a horrible word.
It's obviously not a word that you of yourself quite often.
No, I'm not like a psychic, you know. It's not like that. I'm very tuned in. Mm-hmm. I can feel and hear and see. I can understand you on a very deep level. I'm clairaudient, which is part of the psychic ability, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So when you speak to me, that's when I actually can hear what you're not saying to me, and what your soul is saying to you, me. It's like a horse whisperer, but with souls.
Almost listening with the, if we had a, you know, we have a third eye.
Yeah.
If we had a third and a fourth ear, almost listening with those,
that's right,
those kinds of ears.
Because there are all sorts of vibrations that go on around a person. There are all sorts of things that they know about, but they can't put into words, that they're conscious of. And all I do for them is I actually just put it into words for them so that they understand their lives better, you know, and then offer them solutions, whatever solutions I have available.
And do you work with angels, with guides?
Yes, I do. I work with angels. I see angels. So when I see angels, I actually tell people that I can see them. And then often what happens is I call myself a spontaneous channel, which means that anything that's available in a that is there for people to hear, I can tell them. And it happens spontaneously. I don't ask for it. I don't question it. It just flows out of me. And often that's the most valuable for people. I don't know what I say, and I cannot repeat myself. I say to people, take a notebook, take notes, because I cannot repeat myself. Mm. And when you talk about angels, yes, angels do come through as well.
Now, have you always been able to do this?
Yeah, I have, for a very, very long time. I've been naturally like this, psychic, if you like, since I was conscious, since I was about 3 years old. And I was seeing auras and communicating with animals and being able to tell when it was going to rain. I lived in the bush when I was very young in my childhood. And we're talking about real bush with elephants and lions and really and baboons and snakes and all sorts of things. And I used to go out into the bush and commune with nature, and that's where the shamanic principles come from as well, is because I had that innate ability to just appreciate nature and communicate with nature and commune with nature. Mm. If I wanted to see where the elephants were, I'd go and I'd knew exactly where they were. I'd go and I'd see them. I was taught by my mother up until high school, so we did distance learning, and So I was free after 12 o'clock in the day, had some lunch and off I went. And I'd be able to feed myself and knew where the water was. And, you know, I was in Zimbabwe and most of the rivers there are riddled with bilharzia. Even in those days they were. But I knew where the good water sources were. It was just like a little, probably like a little bushman. You know, just being able to sense where everything was. Because that's what shamans do. They're so in touch with their physical, natural world that it's easy. Mm. It's easy to do this sort of thing, you know.
Now, you are trained as an Hawaiian shaman.
Yeah.
But when you were growing up, this word, shaman, shaman, I don't know if I'm saying it correctly.
It's pronounced either way, yeah.
Was that ever within, did you know that that was what you were? Or did it only happen later?
No, I didn't know it. I wasn't aware of it at all. I was very kind of in my own world. And there was no word for it. It was just, my mother called me a dreamer. And maybe that's what I was, you know, for a very, very long time. Until I started becoming conscious of actually what I was doing. Because I could see aura and didn't know that I could see it. I thought everybody could see.
How did you become conscious that you can do it and other people can't?
It was a slow thing for me. It was like I'd be sitting with somebody and I'd say, I can see something. I can just hang on, and that's what I say. And then I just start to talk. And people say, you know what you've just done? You've just channeled something. Oh, I'd say, you know. And then I realized that this is what I could do. And, of course, that was the owning part of it, to start owning your gifts and your talents, which is exactly what I've done along the years, you know.
What often happens to people who are gifted this way is that there's a almost a rejection, a denial of this gift. Was that the case for you?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I have no idea why, because I come across that a lot in my work, is that people are highly, highly psychic and clairvoyant, intuitive, and they're scared of it. And I teach people how to use their psychic ability and how to become more intuitive. And they come to me because they want to learn how to use it. They want to learn what it's about and whether it's okay. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm at right now, is actually saying to people, you know, teaching people that it's actually okay. It's okay to be intuitive. It's okay to have a hunch. Most successful businessmen go by their hunches.
But we are told, we are trained, as it were, to think that that silent voice here at the back of our head is nonsense. It's just a flight of fantasy. And bringing that, taking that conditioning away must be quite a big part of your job, isn't it?
It is, definitely. I've got a Hawaiian technique that I use, and it puts pay to all of that.
So this Hawaiian shamanism, it's called Huna.
Huna.
Tell me
it's
more.
It's called Huna.
And how on earth did you get onto this?
It was the most incredible thing. About 20 years ago, I was given a book by an acquaintance. And this woman said to me, just read this book. And it was The Science Behind the Miracles. It's a very well-known book.
Okay.
I can never remember his name, Longfellow or Long something or another. I can't remember now. Anyway. And it was found out to be a complete load of rubbish, that he had gone to Hawaii and just exaggerated absolutely everything in the book. But what it started with me was a feeling of, it's almost like, this is where my next step is. This is what I should start investigating. And there's nobody teaching Huna in this country, really, in the true sense, because unfortunately, what's happened, especially in America, is that they've taken it and they've westernized it. And it's become so diluted and so contaminated that if you were to look it up on the net, you would never, ever know the true stuff, the true tradition, if you like.
Mm.
So I read a few books. There was no in the time at that time. There was no internet, and I studied. I practiced what I knew. I practiced what I'd heard about, and practiced it all the time as far as I could.
When you say you practiced it or practice it,
yeah.
Are you talking about ritual? Or?
No. It's not. It's not so much ritual as understanding, and it's a tradition. So it's a tradition of the adventurous shaman, and the adventurous shaman is the one that lives a life of embracing everything that happens, and takes on the best of it and lets the rest go. It's a tradition of being connected with everything around you, on all levels, and including the spiritual levels. It's a tradition of knowing that there are more than three dimensions, and knowing that there are things that are beyond this three-dimensional, five senses reality that we think exists, which actually doesn't, but that's another story, and honoring.
So when you say it's an adventurous tradition, it makes it sound like fun, because my perception of shamans or spiritual teachers is that they can be very serious and you have to listen to them and you have to do what they say. Whereas mm-hmm. when you say adventurous, it sounds like fun. It sounds it like is. Something that inspires people and would want inspire them to such an extent that they would want to follow in the
yes,
tradition.
Yes, it's a very simple tradition. So it deals, and then I say it's very quantum physical, which doesn't sound simple at all, but it's very much breaking the bounds of reality, breaking the bounds of time, breaking the bounds of the things that we're stuck in, by changing your mind. And what the philosophy is that you can change your reality with the power of your mind. And that is exactly what the Hunas do. The Kahuna, who are the people who practice Huna. The Kahuna are the holders of the secret, and they are the ones that, they are the shamans.
But Vanessa, if you say you can change your reality by changing your mind.
With the power of your mind.
Okay, with the power of your mind. How come we still then have people who are suffering or who are struggling to manifest what they would like to see manifested?
I think I just wish that the Hawaiian traditions were more widespread, because if they were, you wouldn't have half of what you have now in this world. Because when you practice Hawaiian, the Hawaiian traditions, when you follow them, you are far more fluid, and you are less constrained by your conditioning, because you can actually see it and understand that it's conditioning, and that your reality is not what you believe it to be. You can change your reality with the power of your mind. And how you change your mind, you change with the power of your mind, is that you understand with your mind what are the components of what are your problems. So you understand, and then you can change your mind about your problems, you can change your attitude, you can change your belief systems, and you can see your conditioning playing out. And as soon as you can identify your conditioning and your programming, you've got power over your reality.
But that's far, far, far easier said than done.
It's the easiest thing in the world. It's absolutely the easiest thing in the world.
You know, it's
that is the magic of Huna. is it's the easiest thing in the world. You see, just by you saying this to me, I can hear your conditioning playing out.
Okay, so how would you then change this conditioning? Because the reason I think it is difficult to, let's say, to change your belief system about another person. Let's say I am angry at someone and I need to forgive them. It's a lot easier to know that I need to forgive them. It's a lot easier to think I need to forgive them. But letting go, that act, is not so easy. And it might be easy for you because mm-hmm. you know the secret. But, you know, for us, people like me who don't know, who still have to learn these lessons, what would you say to me? How do you let this conditioning go?
If you were sitting in front of me.
Which I am.
Yes. So say now this is a consultation, all right? Mm-hmm. And you say to me, what a, he's a this and I don't like him and he did this to me and I'm angry.
Mm.
The first thing that we do is, in the Huna tradition, is we feel the feelings that we're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So the feelings are anger, okay? Anger overlays fear. So I will say to you, what are you scared of? He's going to take my job. He's going to make me feel like a fool. He's going to undermine me in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So is that his issue or your issue? So it's your issue.
Mm.
And because it's your issue, you can change it. And that's where the changing of the mind comes in. Because the conditioning is that if I hate somebody and I say something horrible about somebody and they're an issue for me, I've got to forgive because that's how I let go. It's not. It doesn't work like that. How it works is that you understand your feelings and change your feelings. Forgiveness is a byproduct of understanding.
Mm, mm.
And then you can go through the process of saying, I forgive you. But then it's easy.
Mm.
And that's why people say, but it's so difficult. Because you haven't gone through the first step. And the first step is to understand yourself first.
Well, and to allow that emotion to be felt. Because especially with the, you know, we tend to see emotions as either positive or negative. And especially the ones we've labeled negatives, the anger, the fear, the guilt, the shames. We don't want to feel them. We push them aside and then they frot, they fester.
But why do you feel them? That's part of the programming.
Mm,
why do you feel them? Who's told you that it's bad not to have a job? Society. Who's told you it's bad to follow your dreams and not to work in a huge corporation? Who's told you that?
Mm.
So you're running around with somebody else's words in your head that's becoming your reality. If you go back to your fears, what's the fear? The fear is that he'll take away my job. What's that all about? There's enough for everybody.
Mm.
He's going to undermine me by saying X, Y, and Z. Why would it undermine you? What is that you're holding that he can undermine?
Mm. Where does this human conditioning come from? Where did it start? Who's the asshole who came up with this?
Well, we don't know in the beginning, but...
But I mean, it is so entrenched.
It's entrenched, but
you know, our society, that is what we believe.
But we believe it because we have accepted it as a norm. And we're born into a family that have that conditioning, we condition our children.
Mm.
And we are conditioned by our parents or by an authority figure that says X, Y, and Z, you've got to get married, you've got to have a good job. And it doesn't mean you don't have to have a good job. But it's not a sin to follow your dreams, because that's the flip side of it, is that if you don't have a good job, then you're a dreamer, then you're following your dreams, then you're never going to amount to anything.
But the fact of the matter is, if you don't follow your dreams, if you only chase corporate culture for money, you become desperately unhappy.
Yeah.
Because money doesn't make you happy.
No, it doesn't.
But there are so many people who chase money, who work for money.
That's right. You know, we're the only species on the planet that pay rent to live here.
Mm.
Why must it be this way? And that's where the beginning of my teaching starts. So why must it be this way? Mm. Why can't we change it?
But Vanessa, we are living in this society. We are living with these frameworks of banks and homes, and you know, if you live in the bush, it might be idyllic for a day or two, but you know, we are conditioned to like these creature comforts.
Yes, but it's not about throwing the creature comforts out the window. It's about balance. So it's about being balanced about what you're doing, not to pay rent, so you're earning a salary to pay the bills. That's all you're doing.
Mm.
That's a life completely out of balance. I'm not saying throw the balance out the window. I'm saying get the balance back. So the balance back is being able to be more spiritual, being able to be more connected with your with your world, and to follow your dreams to some extent. You don't have to follow your dreams completely. If the balance is there for you to follow your dreams completely and you can do it, that's great. But there are a lot of people who on the weekends fly, for instance, and that's one of their dreams. But they're running a corporation during the week. But when you get to the point where your life is out of balance, then that is the reason is because your conditioning has taken over.
And more and more people are waking up to this reality. Now, when do you think enough people will cotton on so that the system will change? I mean, we thought with the 2012 Mayan calendar that there would be a definite change. It didn't happen. When do you think we'll reach that critical mass?
How long is a piece of string? You never know. But the object of the exercise for me is to have as much influence in my circle of influence as I can. My whole object of the exercise of me being here is to serve. And we are here to serve each other. That's what we're here to do. And if you can serve somebody just by saying something, just by something profound, or not even profound, just helpful, if you can serve somebody, touch somebody's life, one person, each day, you're doing God's work. And if you're doing God's work, and I'm not a religionist at all, but if you're doing that work, that's part of the balance coming back into your life. And as you do that work, it reverberates and ripples out to other people as well. And that's the only way to do it. You can't evangelize. You can't stand on a mountaintop. You know, unfortunately, it's not that way anymore. You know, you can't get onto the internet. It's through personal contact and personal input with another person who does it with another person. And that's how it works. And that's how the change is going to come. That's what I believe. You know, and that's why I'm here, is to effect that change. And I'm not here to create revolutions. I'm here to show people how to get their balance back. You see,
this Huna tradition. How long did it take you to study it? Did you go to Hawaii? Tell me
about
your training.
Yes, I did. What actually happened was after searching for somebody, and again, I was sitting with another friend.
I just want to ask, and I want to interrupt you, because you spoke about this book, and now you're going to another coincidence. What are your thoughts on coincidences?
Well, it's obviously what I should, you know, I mean, for me, there's no coincidence, of course. I mean, you put it out there, whatever, the thought, the feeling, the intent, whatever it is, you put it out there, and the universe contrives to make it come to fruition. So, yes, I was sitting at dinner with a friend, and I was talking about Huna, who he was very interested in it, but he didn't know much about it. But he had read the book.
Book that's like nonsense.
No, this is now another book.
A proper real book about
that's
it.
That's right.
Okay.
And this book was The Urban Shaman by Serge Kahili King. And he said, read this book. And I read the book, and I can't tell you, it just turned my life upside down. I thought, this is the Huna that I know. This is the Huna that I want to study. And I studied the book. I studied for about 10 years, and then I decided, because there's nobody around who could teach me anything, decided to go and study with Serge. So I went to Hawaii, and I have never looked back. It was the most incredible experience, because you're studying under the shaman. You're getting it from the horse's mouth. And he's, you know, he talks about the stuff on the internet and he says, don't just ignore it. You've got to study under the shamans themselves.
And is there an initiation of sorts or a transference of some energy? I mean, I know when you study Reiki, your Reiki master tells, you know.
Yes, no, there's nothing. There's no, what's it called, tuning with Reiki. What is it? Anyway, whatever it is. What I loved about Serge is that he's so typically a shaman. You know, there's no nonsense style. We're not going to jump around and dance around fires.
But isn't that what shamans do?
That's what some of them do, okay? I mean, the American Indians...
that's a stereotype.
Yeah, the American Indians are true, for real. I mean, that's what they actually do, okay? But I would say that... you see, the Huna tradition is so, so simple. It really is. It's a mindset, and you accept what they, you accept the tradition. You accept what they teach you, and that's what he says. He says there are no rituals. There's no rituals here. You've just got to get it. You've got to get it in your mind. You've got to accept it. You've got to understand that there's no reality for one thing. There's no time for another, and that blows people's minds. And they say, well, actually, I'm not interested. My conditioning's playing in, but I'm not interested. You know, if you're prepared to sit and you're prepared to accept it and soak it up like a sponge, it changes your life because it is so simple.
You said earlier that we think this reality exists. What do you mean by that? When you say you have to accept that there is no time, there is no reality, what do you mean? We're sitting here. It's, if I pinch you, you're going to feel it.
You think you are. You think you're going to feel me pinching me?
No, I know you're going to feel me pinch you.
Because I'm locked into your reality, okay? So say reality.
Are you now coming from the philosophical school of thought that if I don't look at you and I don't think of you, you don't exist?
No. Nothing like that.
I don't get that.
No. You know, the Huna are born quantum physicists, all right? The tradition, they don't know how old the tradition is. It's been going, they say it's going to be going for about 35,000 years. So we're talking prior any of our civilization, you know, prior Atlantis, prior any of those other civilizations as well. And what they, so they have practiced quantum physics for many centuries. Now, quantum physics is the study of quanta. How much? All right. How much? How much is this made of? How much is here? That's the study of quanta. We're all made up of subatomic particles, or photons, which move around and vibrate at a certain rate, which is what makes us solid or makes the air where it is, and we can go deeper and deeper, but let's just leave it like that. All right. So... and this is what the Huna believe as well, that if I vibrate at a certain rate, I can put my hand through a wall. Therefore, does it exist or not? It only exists because I say it exists. It only exists because I am seeing it as existing. But if I vibrate, if I change my mind and vibrate at a certain rate, that my hand can go through that wall.
And can you do that?
No. I haven't been able to do that.
I'm so glad you're saying no, because it makes me feel really inferior if people say you can do these things, and then I think...
But people can, you know, there are people who can.
So you are still training to do this.
Yes, absolutely. It's an ongoing process. Mm. You know, it's, and there's a whole movement now that says, you know, we're on the road to ascension, which is true. Now, ascension is actually the becoming your light body. And your physical body itself will dematerialize. Mm-hmm. It doesn't disintegrate, it just dematerializes. Because everything vibrates at a certain rate.
But would we then still need to be on planet Earth?
No. it then goes through to another reality, if you like, another earth. They talk about another world, another experience. But I mean, it's beyond what we can conceive.
Vanessa, I've just had a thought, and I hope I'm not coming across as being too facetious here. But you know, I really hope that we get to that point before we completely destroy this planet. Otherwise, we are going to kill ourselves, our physical bodies, and then, you know, who knows where we're going to end up. Do you think it's possible?
There are going to be people who will do it, and in fact, there have been already quite a few people who have dematerialized in an instant because their light bodies have become so vibrant, so their energy fields have become so high frequency that they don't need their bodies any longer.
When you talk about a light body, are you talking about the aura?
No, we are light bodies. We are light. We are pure light, dusted with form. That's what we are. So we allow the pure light to take over. We allow it to rise to such an extent that we no longer need this body, because we've only housed ourselves in these bodies for these earthly experiences. That's all we've done. Once we complete with our earthly experience and our light body is then vibrating at the rate that will allow us to transcend, that's what happens. And we're all on the road to ascension. Ascension and transcendence is the same thing. And we're all on the road to this. But so we skip the life-death cycle. That's the ideal. And the Huna talk about it a lot. Not skipping the life-death cycle, but the fact that there are different vibrations and we can create or uncreate as we feel like because of these different vibrations. They say that if you focus on something for 40 seconds, it'll materialize out of thin air.
If you focus on something for 40 seconds, it will materialize.
Out of thin air.
Okay, but then you really have to focus, because, I mean, I can't think that I'll sit here and think of a pen and it'll materialize out of thin air. I mean,
it will. But you've got to, for 40 seconds, you try it. You try it for 5 seconds to keep your mind completely focused on one thing without anything else coming into it.
And that is one of the things that, especially in our Western society, we can't do. We are not trained to silence our minds. I mean, if you look at the way Western people meditate, it's always some mantra or a guided meditation. It's never just boom, quiet.
Silence, yeah.
And I mean, I'm not from the East. I've never been there. But from what I hear, those people can go, pop, and their mind is a blank slate.
Absolutely. Now, I've been on the path for 30 years. I've been doing this work for 30 years. And the highest that I've got to, I'd say, is probably about 30 seconds. And what I've done is you blank your mind completely. You just empty it. Because if you don't empty your mind can be filled with emptiness all the time. Okay. So you need to empty your mind. And that doesn't mean think of black or think of green or think of nothing. Because if you think of nothing, you're thinking of something.
You're thinking of the word nothing.
That's right. So there's such a trick to it. And if you can actually just blank your mind off, you can fill it with anything. And as you start to fill it with anything, that starts to materialize. It's the way it works.
And how do you blank your mind off?
You just, how I do it is I first of all see myself as a mask and nothing behind it. And then I go into that and that's it. I go through my eyes into it. And there's nothing. It's just a void.
Now, this conversation is going to something that I find hugely exciting. So the first time I met Vanessa, she showed me this computer program that is attached to her computer is a probe. And you put the probe on your earlobe, and then on the screen you see a hot air balloon. And then Vanessa tells you, make the balloon rise as high as possible, as fast as possible. And you sit there and you think, what the, huh? But then the balloon actually does go up. And I meditate regularly, and I'm quite a technology junkie, so I have a gadget that I use to meditate with. And the first thing I did was I took a deep breath, and Vanessa said, no, 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 don't come with that nonsense now. Just sit there and look at the screen. And then she takes your base measurement, and then she tells you how to breathe. And when you do that, I promise you, you're going to think that we're talking nonsense. You can go look it up on the interwebs. What's this program called?
Oh, God, I can't remember now.
No, come on, Vanessa. Oh, okay, so what happens once you breathe the way Vanessa tells you to? This hot air balloon goes fast and far. It is astounding. Now, I want you to tell people how to breathe properly. And will this help with meditation, with clearing your mind?
Yes, absolutely. Breathing does. It definitely, there are various ways of breathing. There are many, many ways of breathing, especially in the Indian tradition. The Huna tradition has some wonderful breathing methods as well. And with this particular device that I have, it works on resonance of your systems, okay? And it picks up your heart rate, it picks up your resonance with everything that is working in your body on all levels. And as you breathe, you obviously start to relax, and as you relax, this device will show you just how relaxed you are and just how in sync you are with yourself. So that's what it is. And it's the picture will change in front of your eyes, all right? And there are other pictures that will change even more so, star fields and all sorts of things that can change as well. And it's all to do with your resonance. It's all to do with being in sync with yourself. Now, the method, and Lisa just reminded me of the method, because there's so many methods that I know I couldn't remember it. And her method was, what I was saying was that, so because I am who I am, because I can see what I can see, not only can you see what's that you're out of sync, for instance, on the screen, but I can tell you exactly what chakras are out. So then I will give you a method, a breathing method, which will then to start to clear your chakras. And as you start to clear your chakras through the breathing, you can see how your resonance changes and your chakras start to clear. So it's now quantifiable. We can quantify our vibrations. We can quantify our in-syncness, if you like. And this is what I was doing with Lisa, was I was showing her how in sync she can become just through this breathing technique. And this breathing technique, I don't know how many people know what the chakras are, but you've got a chakra at the top of your head, which is a very powerful chakra, and you've got a base chakra, and you've got other chakras in between. But what I showed her how to do was to breathe in through her crown chakra, which is through her head, on the in-breath, and out through her base chakra, and in through her crown, and out through her base, in a cycle. Now, a lot of breathing is done in a cycle because it's very beneficial to do it that way, and you could see it on the screen. You could just see how she changed.
So it was. That was really, that was impressive.
Yeah.
Does it measure your, you said we all vibrate.
Yes.
Does it measure your frequency that you
it
vibrate?
It measures your heart rate, all okay. Right? And in your heart rate is a frequency. And as the frequency starts to balance, starts to calm down, starts to vibrate at a certain rate, you will see it on the screen.
Okay, so if we relax, if we manage to get our heartbeats down, we are actually raising our vibrations.
Exactly, exactly. And you're raising your balance, so you're becoming in balance, you're getting in sync. So if you breathe and you change your heart rate, your heart has the highest energy vibration of any energy system in your body. It's the vibrations, the fields that the heart sends out are higher and more and stronger than the brain.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is what this picks up. It picks up this energy that the heart sends out. So it stands to reason that if your heart balances, if your heart rate comes down, if it starts going into resonance, your whole body's in resonance. I mean, you can't have a heart that's in resonance and the rest of your body's out of resonance. It stands to reason. And what I do is I actually give people a beautiful mantra to do, which uses the power of the four graces.
Okay, first, I've never heard of the four graces. What are they?
The four graces are contrition, humility. So contrition and humility, forgiveness, love and gratitude. So it's four. I know I've said five, but a few of them go together, and that's what you use. And those are the basis of any. It's the cornerstones of every single system, every single tradition in the universe. And this is what we use. I was just inspired to do it this way. So instead of the breathing, we do the breathing and we do the four graces together. And it's just amazing what starts to happen to people's lives, let alone what happens to the picture on the screen.
I'm going to have to come visit you again because I have to say, if that balloon can go even higher and even faster, or I can see more pretty pictures. I love technology. It's really one of the things that make me very excited. Although there is a dark side to it. Mm-hmm. What do you use this technology for in your practice?
It's mainly to show people the power of the four graces, the power of the use of the four graces in your life. Because if people can actually see how it changes their energy, you know, it's all fine and well me saying blah, 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 it works. But if they can actually see that it works, you know, it makes it so much more powerful for them. And remember, my whole reason for being here is to serve. So if I can serve you by showing you how a method that I give you works in your body, how powerful is that? You know, and that's what I do.
Vanessa, you are also a Louise Hay facilitator. Now, Louise passed away recently, and I thought, you know, it felt right to me to just acknowledge her and honor her, but I don't know much about her work. What was her principle? What did Louise Hay stand for?
Louise, she was a science of mind practitioner to begin with, and she had these experiences that she had, and she came up with this philosophy of you can change your life with the power of your mind. Okay, you can heal your life. You can heal your life. You don't have to have anybody else helping you to do it. And so she works on affirmations, and she works on changing the way you think about yourself, and putting out that energy so that other people think differently of you as well. It's a very entry level. When I say entry level, I'm talking about it's a very simple way of understanding the esoteric field, if you like. It makes a very good entry level for people who are wanting to find out more. She writes beautifully, and she writes very simply. She's not a complicated writer, author, and she gives you exercises to do. So it kind of sets you up. Now, she was my, in terms of the esoteric, she was actually my metaphysical. She was my the first person that I started with. But it was way back in the 80s when there was nothing available here. And everybody was going overseas for their trainings and that sort of thing. And then later on in the 90s, I think, or the early 2000s, these workshops came into the country, and I went on the workshop and then went on the facilitator training, and it was very, very interesting. It really was, because it's very helpful. It's a facilitator training. You can earn, you know, you can make a business from it, and it appeals to a lot of people who are just starting out and who are needing something, you know, just some understanding of what metaphysics is all about,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people call it the New Age and that, but it's not really, Louise Hay is not really so New Agey. She's just very practical and very, very, what I love about her, she's totally sincere and her writing is very sincere. And she had an enormous, enormous influence on metaphysics in the world, you know. She was the forerunner of everybody else. Yeah, I acknowledge her. You know, take my hat off to her. Really.
And where do you think she is now?
Well, hopefully she's not hanging around here.
I have to ask you, you know, affirmations, do they really work? I mean, I have said so many times that I am this, I am that, I have this, I have that. And I am yet to be that or have that. Is it just because I don't believe enough? What's the deal here with affirmations?
I've got my own private view on affirmations. I, you know, having studied Louise Hay like I have, I can understand how affirmations can work for people, and they do, you know. But I don't understand how you can try and solve an emotional issue. Okay, or you can try and solve something that's in your mind with the mind. So if you have, if something is happening to you and you're thinking something and it's giving you an emotional response, but it's in your mind and you're trying to solve it with your mind, who's the problem in the first place? There's no ways you can do it.
Sounds
you need
a bit
to
like
solve
a doctor
it.
Treating him or herself.
Yeah.
Trying to operate on
it. That's right.
Stuff, yeah.
You need to solve it with where, what happens. So in other words, if something, if an anxiety causes you fear, you're not going to solve it because it's in your mind. You can't solve it with your mind. You need to solve it in your heart where the fear is.
Mm.
And that's, this is this beautiful technique that I use. And that's the only way to do it. And I promise you it really works.
You teach workshops. What do you tell people in these workshops? Or if I should come to one of your workshops, what can I expect?
Well, I'm doing, I run various programs, and the programs are about, well, there's a psychic development program, which I teach people how to be psychic, how to use their psychic ability, because everybody has psychic ability, and by the end of the course, they'll be seeing aura through walls, they'll be speaking face to face with angels, they'll know the difference between ego and intuition, and they'll have a wonderful manifestation tool, which really, you know, changes your life as well. And there are other programs as well that deal with past life issues, that also deal with resolving issues from the past, bringing them into the present as a present time experience, and migrating them to future wisdoms. So by the time you finish with that particular course, you'll have a plan for your life, and you would have resolved your past issues. There's also soul retrieval in it. So we go and we retrieve you from a place that is creating nightmares in your life, that is creating issues in your life. And all of these courses are completely channeled. I just ask for them and they just arrive and I just give them.
Mm.
And then I'm running a workshop in October, at the end of October, which is all about this beautiful technique, and it's all about reality, challenging reality and challenging the paradigms that we're caught in at the moment.
When you say it's all about this beautiful technique, which technique?
This is the Four Graces technique.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. It really is. It's going to be a beautiful workshop, and we're doing it up in the Magaliesberg, so it's a residential. We're going to have drumming. We're going to have sound journeying. We're going to have all sorts of things.
What is a sound journey?
It's using sound. See, vibration again. Mm-hmm. It's using sound to create, what I do is to create an altered state, which then enables you to get past your mind and into yourself, that self that is connected with angels and guides and past lives and all of that sort of thing.
One of the things you said while you were telling about these different workshops that really intrigued me is the difference between ego and intuition. What? Firstly, what is the difference?
Well, you can't be spiritually attuned if you don't know the difference between your ego and your intuition.
Mm.
Because your ego often masquerades as your intuition. So your intuition is in most people is very small, and the ego is very big. So we listen to the one that shouts the loudest.
The one that makes the most noise.
That's right. So I teach you a method which then shows you exactly what your ego feels like and what your intuition feels like. And then I teach you how to develop your intuition along those lines. So you learn to listen. You learn to the feeling. Because the whole basis of anything I teach is about what does the heart feel like. Because everything that we experience is from the heart. It's not from the head.
Mm.
But we make it. Our thoughts and our programs make us feel things, and then we feel it in our bodies.
Mm.
But it's from our head. But if we go with our heart only, and we just feel those authentic feelings, we're far more equipped to improve our lives and to become more psychic. We all should be more psychic, more connected, more intuitive.
But how do we know that it is our ego speaking and not our true intuition?
Because it feels different. It feels different, and I teach you the feeling.
Okay, is it something that you can tell me briefly, or is it something that you physically have to
demonstrate? It's a process. Yeah, it's a whole process, but it's very simple. I've channeled it. I don't know where I got it, but it just came to me, and I've channeled it, and it really works, you know, because people don't know. They run their programs to such an extent that they get so confused that they think that it's the only thing there is. But there's a whole part of us that is connected to everything else that is.
Mm,
everything, all the beauty, all the understanding, all the wisdom that we haven't even tapped.
So if we are pure light, dusted with form, what is the meaning of this existence? What's the point?
We've come here, all of us have come here to serve. That's what we're here to do.
And
if we're not serving, we're not happy. So think about it. As soon as you serve somebody, as soon as you do something for somebody without anything, just authentically just do it, you feel better.
But we've been conditioned.
Hello.
There's that word again, conditioning. Yes. But we have the word servant carries with it so many negative connotations. And it's so ego-loaded, those connotations. Because no one wants to be seen as a doormat or as the servant. We look down on servants.
Yes, but service and servant are two totally different things.
Are they really?
They are.
Okay.
Because if I, for instance, am sitting in a cafe and somebody walks up to me, it's happened many times, somebody walks up to me and says, I've heard you talking. Can I sit down and speak to you about something? And I'll say, yes. And the person will, and I immediately can tune into them. I know what's coming. And they'll say to me, this, that. And I will just say one thing. I've served them, and it's made a difference for them. I've served them for that day. That's not servantness.
Well, it's not those negative connotations, but I mean, for me, and this is just for me, if you serve, you are a servant. And I have no problem with being a servant, but we have so many people thinking, ooh, please not anything
yeah,
but.
It's true. But, you know, I've never ever thought about it like that, because I can feel how fulfilling it is to serve. And look, I'm no paragon of virtue, all right? But that is what I'm here to do. That's what I say. Please not, okay? But this is what I'm here to do, and that's what I do.
Mm.
When I sit with somebody, I say, how can I serve you?
Mm.
What can I do? How can I serve you?
Mm.
And when they sit with me, I say to the universe, how can I serve this person? And I'm given exactly what I need to do. And that is what we're here to do. We're not here to do all of these fancy things. We're just here to serve each other.
Mm.
And if we did, it would be a better place. You know?
And when you say we are here to serve each other, would that include the planet?
Yes.
The animals?
Absolutely.
The plants? Because that's something that we are neglecting, absolutely. most of us. I'm not talking about the wonderful eco warriors and greenies who make it their life's mission. I'm talking about us living here in the city, us urban people, you know, being an urban shaman. So serving would also include...
It is service. It's a life of service. That's what it is. And it's not... Humility, remember, is one of the cornerstones. It's one of the four graces. So it's about serving humbly. You know, that's what it is.
Someone said to me that the meaning or the purpose of life is to experience.
Yeah. I think it is, but the purpose of life is to serve, and to serve you're getting experience. You know, you need to, we need to step out of ourselves. That's what we need to do.
Vanessa, where can people get hold of you? How can they find out more about your workshops and connect with you and have you serve them?
Well, can I give my number over the air? Not.
Yeah, it's completely up to you, but I do think, you know, it would be more prudent to rather just give an email address or you're on Facebook, okay. Right?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Vanessa Awaken on Facebook.
Okay, but Awaken is spelled...
A-W-A-K-A-N.
And also with a little...
With a little, yeah.
Dot.
Little,
what do you call that thingamabob?
Apostrophe. It's A apostrophe, W-A-K-A-N. And you can look on my website. You'll probably find a lot more on there. You'll have my phone number as well. It's Soul Whisperer, SOULWHISPERER, alright, .co.za. Okay, that's the website, and the email is Vanessa@soulwhisperer.co.za.
Vanessa Awaken, it's been such a privilege to have you here. Shemaine, we miss you. I'm sure Shemaine would have had loads more questions that would have taken us to even better places. But it was my absolute privilege to have you here. Thank you so much for your time. Palesa, I made it on time, huh? Thanks, girl. Have a good day. From Elizal Tom, take care of yourself.
This is CliffCentral.com.